on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Hello and welcome along to the 105 Sports Special here on Cambridge 105 Radio. Yes, you're right, when you check your watch, it's a different time slot, but the same great stories and local community content from around the county of Cambridgeshire. Now, Living Sport and the Cambridgeshire County Council are encouraging people with disabilities to find new ways to stay active during lockdown. Now, Mark Evans is someone who has done exactly that by swapping the football pitch for Pilates in his living room. I'm going to chat to him in just a bit about all that, how keeping fit has helped his mental and physical health. He also tells me he plays for Cambridge United Community Trust visually impaired side, so I'm sure we'll have a chat about that as well. Now, the Cambridgeshire County Leagues announced yesterday the start dates for the 2020-21 season. Chris Abbott from the Cambridge FA joins me to discuss how clubs can prepare for the new campaign. He's also going to chat to me about winning a Cambridge FA Grassroots Award because the Estec Women's and Girls League picked up the League of the Year award. And the World Snooker Championship gets underway this coming Friday, and our local players Joe Perry and Neil Robertson will be hoping to go deep into the tournament. We'll be assessing how Neil will get on next week's show, but this week we'll also hear from the Fen Potter himself, Joe Perry. If you want to get in touch, you can do. You may notice we're still not in the studio this week, unfortunately, but social media will do the job at 105 Sport on Twitter and Facebook. Send us your opinions and your thoughts on this week's interviews. We'd love to hear them. My name is Ollie Slack. Thank you very much for tuning in. Now, let's start with the fact that Living Sport and the Cambridgeshire County Council are desperately encouraging people with disabilities around the area to find new ways to stay active during lockdown. It's with a new campaign, they've said, called the Stay Active campaign. As many of us have found ourselves sort of spending an increased amount of time at home and not really getting out, but the Living Sport and Cambridgeshire County Council partnership is doing their best to try and encourage people to get up on their feet and get active. Mark Evans, someone who's been doing exactly that, joins me on the line now to discuss how he's gone about doing so. Mark, thanks very much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me on the show. This is great.
Firstly, how are you? How's lockdown been over the past, what was it, couple of months, 3 months now?
Good in some respects, in terms of being able to sort of self-develop, get the jobs done that you know usually get to do, but difficult in terms of my work for not being able to see customers that I train and support through technology, through my work, through RNIB, in terms of interacting with them at societies or events or exhibitions. And also training the volunteers. That's had to be done virtually the same as everybody else. But I'm feeling good.
Good. Have you managed to be? Are you working at home? Have you been furloughed out? What's your sort of work status been like?
No, I've been working full time. So I'm one of 12 who work for RNIB in the specialist technology team. I'm partially sighted. I have a condition called nystagmus. But you know, I've been able to work from home. Sort of still hitting 40-hour-plus weeks, making sure that people can get access to technology, a range of different sort of talking book players and other devices during this period to keep themselves entertained during lockdown.
Sounds like you've managed to find a bit of time for some exercise as well, which we'll come on to in just a bit. Before we come on to chat about, I believe, your exploits in Pilates, what was your sort of routine of exercise or your feeling towards exercise before lockdown, Mark?
My feeling was obviously strong. I used to run for running club, Bushfield Joggers in Peterborough, and then I kind of moved away from that based on work and time, and would still sort of self run twice a week, probably doing six to eight miles a week. So not huge amounts compared to what I used to do, but also trying to sort of work on other elements of fitness, so a lot of sort of press ups and sit ups and things like that. But the main thing that I do is to play and train with the guys on a Saturday in Cambridge, at a place called Coleridge College, so not too far from the train station, and that's a good venue. It's nice and accessible to us all. Get their vision impairments quite easy, so yeah, that was the work would form the week, and then the bit of running, and then the Saturday would be the reward.
as the manager.
for all the hard work you do during the week. So to get together with the guys I train with, we're also great friends, and work on our game.
And that reward has almost been snatched away from you over the past few months, I'd imagine. Of course, with the lockdown situation and the social distancing measurements put in place by the government. So how has that affected your ability to exercise and do the things you love?
It was tough mentally, because you're used to being around the group, having a laugh, improving yourself, bouncing off our infectious coach's personality, a gentleman called Phil, who some of you may know. Really, really great guy, and understands disability. So to not have that was disappointing. But Phil and the club have come up with sort of Zoom calls. So we have a weekly Zoom call, so we can interact, we can still chat. We put ourselves in the mind of the referee, and Phil's improving our mental element of the game and our understanding and our education to basically build on that, which will then help us when we get back to practically training.
And due to not being able to play football with the Cambridge United Community Trust visually impaired side, you've swapped the football pitch for Pilates, a new exercise you've taken up. Is it just to keep yourself busy, keep yourself happy and healthy with your mental and physical health?
Yeah, so that's correct. Thank you for that. I took up Pilates based on the advice of my wife, who used to go to a physical class before all this happened. And her instructor was doing classes via Zoom. It's called Core Factor Pilates. Really good classes. I believe she charges around sort of £70 a year. But you get a sort of a newsletter and regular conversations with her and advice and support. And you get to sort of go to as many sessions as you want. They're hour-long sessions, just 14 sessions a week. We usually do two sessions a week of those 14 sessions. Really good fun. Starting off, and she runs the courses in sort of 10-week slots, from week one being very, very basic moves to week 10 being really, really intense. And I kind of thought, oh, Pilates, yeah. Old ladies sat around, just talking, having a bit of a stretch. It's actually really hard. It really is, but it's great fun as well. So that's helped with the core strength. I've also found an application called the Nike Training Centre. Has been relaunched and reintegrated for iOS and Android. And that's accessible with both magnification and speech, and is very, very audibly clear, and you can build your workouts and your routines. So I've been using that, and that's a really great tool. And the workouts and the plans are free at the moment as well, which is nice. Alongside the application being free itself, so that's pretty cool. Alongside that, a little bit of cycling. I haven't done as much running because I'm worried about people coming up to me with things with COVID, so I felt safer cycling. A combination of those three, really.
And this has been something that Living Sport have been really interested in, alongside their partnership with Cambridgeshire County Council. They're trying to encourage people to stay active, to get involved in exercise and activity over the lockdown period, to try and improve people's mental health and physical health as well. How important has doing Pilates, increasing that amount of exercise you've been doing in the lockdown, been important to you?
I think it's been massive for me, first of all. But before I go into that, I just want to say the work by Living Sport has been excellent in terms of linking people together, trying to find the right exercise and the right program, and the support from the council has been massive with their development, because obviously they've had to shift everything they've done to more of a virtual space, including their premier event, which is called the School Games. So if people want to go and check it out, they can go to the Libby, if they type into Google Living Sport, they can find out about all the stuff that Living Sport do. So there's a bit of a Living Sport plug. But in terms of answering your question, I feel like I've digressed like a politician.
Doing very well as a politician.
Thank you. The key for me was when I first started lockdown, and also physically, I think it's posture. Because I've not just got the sight loss, I've got a little bit of cerebral palsy in my left leg. Physically, posturing, positioning, that's made me a lot stronger, holding your body in a better position, stretching, before and the sort of regular stretching and the regular sessions. Let's put it like this: if I miss a week's session, meal or something happens, I'll know I've missed a week's session and I won't have that. I'll feel it the next time I go back to Pilates because of the way the muscles are worked and the way it puts the emphasis on the body. But mentally, it feels brilliant when you make those stretches and you complete those exercises. And some of them are, as I say, are really, really tough, putting yourself up into like a corkscrew and, positioning yourself in different ways. So it helps with Twister, I guess, when we have doing that and families and people come over and we get back to normality. But in all seriousness, it's really nice to do mentally. But it's like anything, it's finding the right session for you, what you love, and then also the right instructor. Because like anything, if you have a great teacher, someone who empathizes, someone who cares and supports, it's only going to light the fire under you and make you love that session more, that sport more, that activity more.
All the county Twister champions have just signed up to Pilates online now. With regards to though, you mentioned the fact that you were a bit cautious of running around your local area because of course the COVID symptoms and people coming up to you. So you found it beneficial despite the lockdown. It's actually worked in your favour that you found it beneficial doing exercise from home and doing these Pilates workouts from home with the family, with your wife.
Yeah, very much so. Absolutely, because I can finish the end of my session, and I work where I'm talking to you now in my living room. I can finish the end of my session. I can move a little bit of furniture around. And then I can sort of get the mats out and load the iPad up or bring up the laptop and just we're on and we're ready to go and it's done. And I think the big thing for a lot of people is you haven't got that travel element, and especially when you're applying a partial sighted, to think, right, I've really enjoyed that session, and then you think to yourself, oh no, it's absolutely chucking it down, and I've got to walk, and then I've got to get the bus, and then I've got to get a train, or I've got to get a taxi, and you're sort of planning that onto your journey. I mean, I know sighted people have to plan in terms of the routes and timings of car and everything else, of course, traffic, etc. But I think for us, it makes it, and for people with disabilities, it's an extra step, an extra sort of hurdle. And especially if you're doing something for the first time, you've got that nerves anyway. When you go into any place, any situation, you don't want to, new kid at school syndrome. But I think if you're not as confident, I think having that and sort of working on the exercises to at least understand things, and then you can always go to a practical session when they open up. I still think Zoom sessions and other virtual sessions will run alongside practical sessions when things go back to normal, because of the popularity.
I want to talk about the mentality as well of people during lockdown, Mark. Myself, I spoke to you off air and said that for me, it's found it a bit more difficult to try and motivate myself to do exercise at home. I have done some, but not as much as I would be doing at the gym pre-lockdown. We'll be going 3 times a week, etc. But you said to me off air yourself, you haven't found that at all. In fact, quite the opposite. You used to run really regularly, and of course you used to be playing your football before lockdown, but you've almost used it as an opportunity to say, look, well, we've got this time, let's try something new, let's try something different.
Yeah, I mean, I invested in some weights with the Nike app, so I could unlock more of the exercises, and the sort of the Nike app is good because it kind of rewards you on your progress. You get these little achievements which pop up, if you do so many exercises in a row, or if you beat a time and stuff, so that visually and audibly you can hear that's quite nice. But also I think it is down to mentality. It's down to trying new things. I bought a tool which goes around my belt, and it has a cord attached, I think, and a piece of material that goes over a football. It wasn't very expensive, and it means that now I can wear this sort of tool in my back garden and do my keepy uppies and kick the ball long, do different sort of passing, different exercises, different step overs on the ball. And sort of different things to help my balance and my coordination, and I think my touch has come on tremendously because of that. I may decide when we meet up with the lads, then I may find I'm a step or two slower, otherwise. But I think a lot of people will be that, so I'm not concerned about that. That'll come back. But I've seen it as a different way to be motivated. You're not always going to feel it. and feel motivated every day. But if you can find a way to, or an escapism to find that motivation and to do a little bit, then go for it. That's why something like the NICAP is so good, because you can pick and choose the exercise, the body type, the level of time you want to work out for. So if you just want to do like a quick, I don't know, 8-10 minute workout, just a general thing, that'll advise you, just a general cardio thing or a quick strength workout, or a balance workout, you can.
And people can find loads and loads of different ways to get active, get up and about on their feet during lockdown, at home, on the sofa, etc., on the Living Sport website and the Stay Active with a Disability page. Mark, lastly on this, what would your advice be to those listening thinking, I'm not so sure, should I really try something new? Should I give it a go? Should I get active?
I'd say go for it. You know, you haven't got anything to lose. You remember, at the end of the day, you're only competing against yourself first and foremost. And although obviously there's a lot of team sports out there, and there's a lot of there's a lot of team activities, there's also a lot of individual activities and a lot of stuff you can do as part of that. So it may not be that you feel comfortable to do the endurance stuff, but you can do some strength stuff, you can do some stretching. It's really understand that, the right types of stretches. And there's guides on Living Sport's website in relation to that, because that's healthy for us all to do, along with diet as well. And what we eat is really important, getting enough rest and hydration. Mm-hmm. But I think it's finding that type of thing that you want to do. It doesn't matter if you're 5 or you're 55. I know it's harder because some people are, you know, in flats, or they don't always have the space. But even in small spaces, you can do a lot. You can do a lot of body weight exercises, squats, press-ups, sit-ups, etc. So it's down to that. Find something that you like, start off slow, build it up, and if you need advice, go and talk to Living Sport.
Yeah, just to reiterate, the Living Sport website's the place to go. Stay active with a disability. I'm on there now looking at lots of great stuff for people to get involved in. Yoga, there's NHS 10-minute exercises, just short ones, there's dancing, and lots of stuff. Chores, gardening, daily walks, how you can complement your exercise with those as well. Mark, before we let you go, let's just quickly mention Cambridge United Visually Impaired side. Last season, did very well indeed. There's two tiers, of course, in the Cambridgeshire League, starting the Championship, got the promotion to the Premiership. But when's the new season going to start? When are you going to be back and kicking the ball around again?
Oh, that's the million-dollar question. That's like saying when, you know when Christmas Day is, but or as a kid you understand it, but you're not quite sure of the date. That's the best analogy I can give to you on the spot. I don't know. We have to wait and see in relation to what the league says and everything else. I hope sooner rather than later. I hope we can start training end of September. Obviously, it'll be PPE'd up. We'll have to bring our own ball, our own gloves, so mask, the wipes, all the sprays, etc. Honestly, I'm going to need another bag or something at this rate. I'm hoping before the end of the year. Realistically, I think we'll be probably looking at, say, February, March next year, and unfortunately. But if we can do any form of social distance training to prepare for when it is, I know the lads are chomping at the bit to get ready and to push on and to try and become champions of the division.
And looking to build on the success you had last year.
Yep. Absolutely, and to integrate sort of more players, if people are interested and they want to give it a go, people can, as I say, search for, get in touch with Living Sport or look on the Cambridge United Community Trust Visually Impaired Facebook page and social media, and sort of get in touch with Phil Mullen, the coach, that way as well.
Mark, pleasure chatting to you. Thanks very much for coming on the show, and hopefully, I'm sure you've certainly inspired a number of our listeners to get active on their feet, and wish you all the best in the future, and speak again soon.
Thank you very much. Take care, everybody. Cambridge 105 Radio.
Sports on Cambridge 105 Radio. Yes, you're listening to the 105 Sports Special here on Cambridge 105 Radio. Let's turn our attentions to football now and local grassroots football, as the Cambridgeshire County Leagues announced yesterday the start dates for the 2020-21 season. Doesn't exactly roll off the tongue nicely. But before we get into that, we've been rounding up our CAMS FA Grassroots Award winners on the show over the last few weeks. We did say we'd chat to Izzy Bryant, who won the Rising Star of the Year. We'll be chatting to her hopefully next week. We've still got another award to discuss, though, and that's the League of the Year, which was won by the Estec Women and Girls League. Chris Abbott from the CAMS FA joins me to discuss all of that right now. Chris, thanks very much for coming on the show.
No problem. Anytime.
How are you? Are you good?
Yeah, good. Thank you. Yeah, really good. Just sort of started to plan for a new season now, which has been really, really good. I hope we can get started soon.
Yeah, so I imagine that must be quite a nice relief, because over the last few weeks you've sort of been in limbo, I imagine, trying to wrap up last campaign and not knowing when the next one will start.
Yeah, I think it's always been like there's been a lot of predictions. Oh, we're going to start here, we're going to start here, we're going to start here. But nobody really knew the answers. So we've now got, obviously, there's a lot of work for clubs to do before we can start. But we're now getting to a stage where we can start planning and working for the start of what will be a new season.
And I imagine as well, I think you've mentioned to me a couple of times that this period of time has been actually quite useful for the CAMS FA to get sort of a number of sort of jobs done and dusted. And now you've almost got a potentially a clear schedule now running up to the new season.
Yeah, I think obviously the quieter time in football sort of gave us the opportunity to just review and just speak to our clubs and support our clubs through things and have a chat with our clubs and catch up with our clubs, which maybe when you've got the hustle and bustle of a season, you don't always get the chance to do. So it's given us a chance to speak to more our clubs more, have more reviews with our clubs and really support our clubs for what has been a difficult period for them as well as anybody else.
Yeah, we'll come on to the CAMS County League and the news about the National League setup and the women's football period as well a bit later on. But first of all, let's talk about the Estec Girls and Women's League, because first we're going to talk about them winning one of the CAMS FA Grassroots Football Awards, the League of the Year. I think for the second year running, or they've won it once before anyway, but a very deserving winner in your eyes, Chris?
Yeah, really pleased to win it again. I think we won it 2 years ago because I think it was won it. Yeah, I think it's just shown the commitment, the growth of the league. We record number of teams again last year. Coming into this current season, we're going to be even more teams, which is fantastic. But the award's not really just for us guys that administer the league, it's for the whole league. The club, a league is nothing without its clubs and volunteers. And to see what effort goes into increased participation in the female game across Cambridgeshire and sort of surrounding counties is fully testament to everybody involved in clubs, and it's a really recognition for everybody in the league and the hard work they put in.
And those participation numbers, again, have gone through the roof. In many ways, another record-breaking year for the league. 25 new teams entered, 176 in total. Again, record-breaking numbers. So it continues to grow year on year.
Yeah, it does. To be fair, we thought we would eventually plateau, but again, we've not. We were up 20-odd teams, I think, last year, roughly, I think it was. Again, at the moment, we stand at 190 teams going into 2021. So we're up again. It's just tremendous, really, to see so many young girls and female players want to play football, which is testament to everything we've done and everything the league's done and the clubs have done to support and encourage that.
And how do those sort of numbers reflect in the community, Chris? Because I guess he's sitting here saying numbers are increasing, et cetera, et cetera. But when you're actually getting new football clubs or other football clubs that just run men's side, then enter girls and women's teams as well, what impact does that have on those clubs, on the community that those clubs are in?
I think we've seen it in this period more than anything that a football club is really the heart of a community. I think we've seen the last 4 or 5 months more than ever that's the case. Whether you're a National League club, you're a Football League club, you're a grassroots club, the football club is the heart of the community and people miss playing with their friends, playing with the group. So I think the more diverse each clubs have got with their teams, with male, female, disability, any, you know, teams, shows really what a football club can be and can be a real heartbeat of a community.
Certainly shows the strength of a community as well. Just finally on the numbers, 2,300 players last year. Again, sounds a lot. How do these numbers compare to sort of other sports or other football activity, other football clubs in the area?
Figures-wise, obviously from a female point of view, it's the most we've ever had reached with the league. From other sports point of view, it is the largest female participation sport in the area by some considerable way, to be fair. And we hope that continues to grow. I think obviously the Women's World Cup now is going to be 2022, isn't it? Or the European Championship, I can't remember which one it is now, lost track. But obviously, hopefully those events will again encourage more people to play and more girls to play football, which is what we really, really want.
One of the new rules that was amended to the Estec Women's and Girls League this year was that any team under 11 or below could enter at any point during the season. Just tell us the thinking behind adding that into the rules and regs and how it worked logistically as well.
I think it's massively important because under 11s below, the FA rules are quite correctly that it's non-competitive, so you can't record league tables and results, which is really important. That's just not in the female game, that's in the male game as well, because for a lot of people, sort of under 7 to under 11 will be their first journey into the game. And it's like anything you go. If you go to the cinema or you go to a shop or you go to an adventure park, if your first experience of that is not good, you don't go back. So it's really important that even at football, the first experience that young player gets is a good one, so they want to come back. And that's really, really important and vital. So really, with the under 7s and 11s, because it's non-competitive, we can add fixtures at any point. And we just feel that it's really important that sometimes clubs haven't really got quite enough players for like September, but all of a sudden with a bit of a marketing and a bit of publicity in October and November, they have. So why should we then make them wait a year to come into a programme that they can come into straight away? And that's really important for us. And I think even more, that'll be emphasised this year, because particularly the younger age groups, the 8s, 9s, 10s, they probably haven't done any recruitment because they've not been able to because of obviously the circumstances. So that's going to be vital for the growth of the game this year, without a shadow of a doubt.
And I imagine as well, once teams get playing and the word sort of gets spread around at school as well and more people get interested and then clubs want to start, it might be October, November and they're thinking it's too late. But this allows them to, you know, when that buzz is really at its height, to create a team and get into the league and get playing football.
Yeah, definitely. I think, and hopefully, because people have been effectively locked up for a period of time because obviously the rules, people want to get outside and do something, and that would encourage people to play. I think we've seen it more than ever, speaking to clubs, speaking to people. It's not just being people's physical health in this period that's been affected by not being out to play football. It's people's mental health as well. And it's really important that we've discussed this as a league already massively about when we start the season. You know, we are going to start potentially, well, the Girls and Women's League will start on the 19th and 20th of September, which is a week later than normal. But we're very conscious that some of these youngsters haven't been to school for 6 months. So they've got to adjust to coming back into a school environment and then back into a football environment. So we've got to be able to work with our clubs to make sure that their enjoyment for football when it restarts again is important.
Yeah, well, it sounds like you're doing a grand job. Congratulations on winning the award once again. So let's talk about the Cams County League then, Chris. It was announced earlier in the week that there'd be a meeting yesterday, Friday evening. How did that meeting go? Did anything get confirmed? Are we any closer to knowing when the season will start?
Yeah, it did. It was a really positive meeting. Obviously, committee members have taken the views of local clubs, and on the whole, most local clubs were keen and willing to start. There's one or two that have got concerns, and we'll work with them to ensure they're happy and feel safe to return when we do return. And the committee agreed last night that the Kershaw Premier Division will start on the 5th of September, along with Senior A and Senior B, because they're going to probably have a few more teams in their leagues, and the remainder of September. So that was confirmed last night, and that's been communicated to the club, so they all know our start date, which is really, really important for them, because I think clubs have now got something to work to. I think it's 6 weeks today, I think it is for the 5th of September, and 7 weeks for the 12th, so we've got a little bit of time still, but it gives clubs something to work towards. Once that was decided and discussed, we then started to have some ideas around league constitution. I think the committee are very keen, particularly with the current circumstances, to try and reduce the travelling for clubs, obviously, and keep the travelling as little as possible. So there's now going to be some work for the next sort of week done on that. So basically what will happen from now is Phil Mitchum, who's the league competition secretary, will start working on a proposed constitution. That will come back to the committee next Thursday evening. And then on that will go then out to the clubs after that for a consultation period before we then confirm the constitution and get ready to go on the 5th of September.
And does that include fixtures as well, Chris?
Fixtures will be a little bit longer. Obviously, once the constitution's done, we'll then start working on the fixtures. A couple to 3 weeks after that will be the fixture. We are a little bit tied at the moment because we've got clubs that play on senior club grounds, for example, Ely, Soham. We just have to wait to see what their fixtures look like before we can fully confirm a fixture list. So, but we will get them out to clubs as soon as possible so they know what they're planning for.
How different will the routine before you actually, you know, kick the first ball in the season be for clubs in the local area to what it usually is? Of course, with the pandemic and social distancing, etc., all these measures in place, how different will that preparation be to actually start the season for clubs?
I think it'll be massively different because, you know, there's going to be a lot more communication for the clubs going to have to speak to their parish councils about what facilities can be opened, what can't be opened, potentially. You know, we've got the guidance at the moment as it stands. We're currently changing rooms should only be used if really necessary. They've got to disinfect the ball at certain periods, as much time during the game as they can, you know, when it goes out of play, etc. They've got to disinfect the goal posts when they can as well. There's going to be a lot more, and we do appreciate there's going to be a lot more work on a volunteer, but we hope that people want to play football, and most importantly, you want to play football in a safe environment. And that's something the clubs are really going to have to take on board. They've obviously got to produce a risk assessment, which we as a county FA and the league are. We're putting on some club support events to support them with that. They're on the 3rd and the 6th of August. And it's key for us as a county FA and a county league to really support our clubs through this time, because they are our bread and butter. They are our lifeblood of what we do. So all the support and help we can give them to do that, we will do that. And that was what was discussed last night about what support we can give and how much support we can give to really make sure they're ready at the start of the season.
Hmm. Yeah, certainly they are. Certainly the lifeblood of the Kems FA and football in the area. With regards to, you obviously mentioned preparation there and what they're going to have to do before the season, how does that change for the clubs at the National League level? You like to say the clubs we cover, Histon, City, St Ives and St Neots, because the FA confirmed last weekend that from step 3 to 6 in the National League system will be starting on the 19th of September in the women's football pyramid. It's around mid-September. Of course, there's sort of guidelines have to be followed, and again, there'll be announcements on spectators, etc. But that's the sort of penciled date. How does it change regards to their preparation for getting ready to the new campaign, Chris?
I think the biggest difference for them at the moment is the huge difference. Obviously, most of step 3 to 6 football and women's are played in stadia. So there's a stadium quite compared to a recreation ground. So the difference with them is obviously ensuring as much as possible they can make their stadium as COVID safe as possible. Obviously, and the key thing for them is obviously it's going to be return of crowds. Football at that level can't really survive without crowds. So that's going to be key for them. And when they restart, and the dates they've been given are provisional, because obviously they are going to wait on government advice. What I keep saying to people, though, that it's still 8 weeks away, so that's a long time to get things done. Obviously, for them, preparation pre-season, all friendlies have got to be behind closed doors. And I believe that they know, if possible, get players to go changed, you know, to eradicate the risk and spread of the disease. So, yeah, it's going to be a challenge for them. I think, speaking to our local clubs, they're all pretty okay with what they've got to do. I think, you know, they're up and running and planning with it. I think people are just keen to play football, but I think the key thing for them will be is to making sure their stadium is COVID secure. And obviously, they've still got to do the risk assessments, etc. But obviously, behind closed doors for pre-season.
Lastly, Chris, your message to local clubs in the area who have waited a long time for football, but are still, like you said, about 8 weeks away, but they're eagerly waiting to get the balls down on the grass.
Yeah, I think, first of all, say massive thank you to everybody involved in grassroots football. Without their support, their hard work and everything, we wouldn't have the game we have. We appreciate the last, was it 4 months now, 5 months now, being extremely difficult for everybody, both personally and professionally in the world, and we appreciate that. And without a shadow of a doubt, our message is, yeah, we will be back, but we must make sure we're back in a safe and secure manner. And that, and we will offer, as a County Football Association, we will offer as much support as we possibly can to ensure that you've got that, those risk assessments, etc., everything in place to start playing football safely and securely. But rest assured, we will be back. Looking at our figures of teams across all our leagues, we're going to be back stronger.
Good.
Because we have got more teams as it stands at the moment. So hopefully we're back stronger. We will be back, and we will be there to offer any support the clubs need throughout this.
Yeah, that really just showed the desire to play football, the love and the passion for the game in the area. Chris, pleasure to chat as always. Congrats on winning League of the Year as well. And hopefully when we next chat, it's probably about pure football rather than all this. Yeah, this
100%. I did say to a club secretary, I'll be glad when you're having your question, a referee appointment with me again, so we can actually get some football out there, definitely.
I'm sure you'll be tired of them when they start flying, though, Chris.
Definitely, no worries. Cheers.
Cheers, Chris.
Cheers, mate. Cheers. Cambridge 105 Radio.
Sports on Cambridge 105 Radio. Welcome back to the 105 Sports Special here on Cambridge 105 Radio. As we said at the top of the show, a slightly different time slot today. Saturday at 12 o'clock. The show will be repeated as usual on Sunday at 6 p.m. if you miss any of it. We'll also be releasing it as a podcast straight after we're done here at 1 p.m. So make sure you head over to our social media pages at 105 Sport on Twitter and Facebook if you missed any of it. If you're wondering what's taken its place in the Wednesday slot, well, that's From the Pavilion, our local cricket show. We ran up all the action from the local scene around the county, and now the cricket's back, the show's back in its regular slot. Anyway, let's crack on with the show. And the World Snooker Championship gets underway this coming Friday. Joe Perry and Neil Robertson. Joe Perry based in Chatteris. Neil Robertson is a Cambridge-based snooker player originally from Australia. They're both local guys, and they're hoping to go right deep into the tournament this year. We'll be talking about Neil next week and assessing his chances of winning the trophy. But now let's hear from the Fen Potter, Joe Perry. He caught up with Isaac Brindley and Ben Pryor earlier on in lockdown on HCR.
Joe Perry, thank you for joining us on the show. First of all, I've got to ask you, how are you finding this 7 weeks lockdown so far?
It's getting tougher. Day by day is getting tougher. The food bills are horrendous. We've got a very busy house. It was, like I say, it was all good fun at the beginning. Kids loved it. No school, but I think everyone's still fed up with it now.
Yeah, absolutely. You've got a snooker table at home. Are you taking this option to practice the game while you're off, keep the momentum going?
No, I haven't. Funny enough, I actually practiced for an hour today. It's the first time I've practiced properly on the back of the news yesterday that the World Championship 90% chance might go ahead in August. So it's giving me something to sort of focus on. Stage of my career, 45 years of age, I need a reason to practice. I don't practice for the love anymore. So that was sort of good news yesterday. So it's giving me a reason to get my gear out.
Yeah, fantastic.
Lovely, lovely. Firstly, how are you, Joe? It's nice to meet you.
Yeah, I'm all good. Thanks. Nice to meet you too.
First thing I wanted to ask you was, obviously, you've got the nickname of the gentleman. How did that sort of come about, obviously, when you turned professional and starting out in your career?
Well, it didn't come about in the beginning. It took a while to sort of like establish that and for people to get to know me. No, not really. believe it or not, I had a few silly little nicknames at the start, obviously, because of where I live. I was the Fen Potter and things like that. But I genuinely believe, Hazel Irving was the one that came up with the nickname, because I never really had a nickname. And she always said I was always very polite around the venues, just nice, never sort of ever sort of like said anything bad about anyone after I'd lost or won or anything like that. So I think she came up with the nickname, the gentleman. So it's stuck. You can imagine I get a lot of stick from my peers because they see the other side of me sometimes. So but that's what it is, and it seems to have stuck now, and I think that'll be with me till the end now.
Another question I wanted to ask you was obviously about your Crucible debut against Steve Davis, of course, winning it on the final black. So how was that feeling? Obviously, how nervous were you before in the debut in a Triple Crown event, and the feeling after potting that black to win?
It was such a mixed feeling of emotions, you know, the excitement of winning, the sheer relief of finally getting over the line, a match that I'd sort of threw away, really. It would have been like a dream debut at one stage. I was 7-2 ahead, playing, you know, arguably the biggest name in the game at the time. It was a dream debut. And then the pressure just got to me and I sort of crumbled and managed to hold myself together to win. So it was a real mixed bag of emotions. It was relief more than anything, I think, at the end. But it was, to be honest, it was probably as excited as I've ever been, I think. I've won tournaments since then, and I've had some massive wins and harsh defeats. But I don't think anything's... I think a couple of feelings might have like rivaled it, but I don't think anything's ever beat that. That was pretty special, really.
You talked earlier about the news today about the World Championship at the Crucible being delayed now. 90% chance it's going to go ahead at the start of August. There's still a little bit of talk, isn't there, Joe, about is spectators going to be allowed inside the Crucible? Because I think it had around about 1,000 spectators. But as a player, does it add value to have those spectators, even though they're remaining quiet during the shots, but there is claps and cheers for specific shots and pots? But as a player for you, does it add value as a player in the tournament to have spectators there watching?
Oh, 100%. You know, we was out in Gibraltar when the news first broke about places being closed down and, you know, coronavirus really kicking in. And halfway through that tournament, it was only a 3-day event, but halfway through they decided to close the doors. And it's not specifically a well-supported event. You know, you might get 100, 150 people in the arena at any one time, but to have none whatsoever, it was quite eerie. And, you know, you half expect it sometimes in some of the qualifying venues where spectators are very, very few and far between. But, you know, an event like the World Championship, it will seem very, very strange. But it's, you know, it's one of them. I suppose you have to just accept that there's going to be lots and lots of people, millions normally, watching on the TV, and just try and be as professional as you can. It will undoubtedly feel different. You know, I don't know how hyped up some players will get. I think I might struggle personally to get myself really up for it, because, you know, nerves sometimes bring out the best in you, and it will still feel like a bit of a practice game, I think, with no one watching.
Yeah, I can see, Joe, even though we're doing this over the radio, we've got a video on at the moment because we're doing this over the power of technology nowadays, but your hair's looking very trim. Are you doing this yourself in lockdown?
Yeah, mine's one of the easier haircuts to keep sorted. So yeah, it's not a problem for me. I haven't missed the hairdresser, I've got to be honest. Once a week, she shaves it all off for me, and we go again. I'm not saying I've had to worry about the hair situation.
Fantastic. And, you know, the more I've understood snooker over the years, and the more you've talked about it over the years, it's more of a sort of a close-knit club in a way. You know the other players very well. They know you very well. But when you're at the table, do you just put that all aside and concentrate on the game and don't necessarily think of the friendship in a way? You're there to play the sport, aren't you?
Yeah, the friendship and that is... It is a big thing, and like, as snooker, you know, I've seen snooker change so much, more so since the last 10 years since Barry Earn took over. You know, we really are a worldwide sport now, not just watched around the world, but we travel around the world. And you know, you don't want to have animosity with any of your fellow players. There's, you know, it's like anything. Some personalities are going to clash, some are going to really get on. But I can't actually, if I had to put my life on, I couldn't actually tell you two players that don't get on that much that it causes an issue. Everyone sort of, you've obviously got your close friends, but no, there's no like nastiness anywhere on the tour. There never is, not that I've seen. And it just makes for a nice place. Obviously, occasionally you're going to have to play some of your closest friends and it's difficult, but you just learn to deal with it. It's, you know, that's what I think when they talk about experience and stuff like that, I think that's what they sort of, what they're referring to, because you just be professional and concentrate on your own game. And you know, at the end of the day, it's a game of snooker. As you know, as coronavirus is proving, there's far worse things going on in the world. And to lose 5-4 to your friend on the black, it's not the end of the world. You know, you just you go for a beer or something to eat, and you're friends again straight after. It's just one of them things.
Exactly. So you mentioned there about the experience, obviously playing different friends and close people too. But another thing that you've experienced is a fair few finals and appearances in your career. Another thing I wanted to ask you was about your first ranking final appearance at the European Open against Stephen Hendry. What sort of was that like in terms of your first appearance in a final?
That's a great example of like having experience. And, you know, I played so well in that tournament. I beat some great players. You know, I was a surprise finalist. There's no getting away from it. You know, no one would have anticipated I'd get to the final. I beat, I think at the time, reigning champion or reigning world number one, Mark Williams, 6-2 in the semi-final, and I played fantastic, you know, and I thought I had a chance of winning. But on the day, I just completely froze, and I was just in complete awe of Stephen Hendry, and you know, and the match just got away from me. But I learned a lot from it, you know, and that's what you can do when you lose heavily and lose bad matches and finals. You have to sort of try and learn from it if you can, and that's what I did. It was all over in a flash, really. I never really got into the match. I think it was 1-1 at one stage. It was the closest it ever was. And then he sort of like taught me a lesson. But it was a great learning curve for me. And it sort of set me up, and it helped me get into the top 16 the following season. And that's all you can do, really. Just try and just push on and keep learning.
Yeah, like you said, it's a great way to gain experience. And like you said, you've built on that in the time since then. Like you've reached three semi-finals at Triple Crown events before you got to the final of the Masters in 2017. How is the, is there a step up in sort of not class, but step up in the situation in terms of it being a Triple Crown event sort of compared to a normal ranking event? And how does that affect you on the day?
I don't think actually on the day it makes that much difference. I think you go out to win every match you play, and obviously as you get towards the business end of tournaments, each match becomes bigger. I think after the event, it's a much bigger deal. You know, I lost in the final of the Masters to Ronnie O'Sullivan, and at the time it was one of the things, it was another match I'd lost and I could deal with that. You know, I've learned to lose and stuff, but when I think back, you know, had I won that game and my name been on that trophy, that would have been a real, real mega, mega moment for me and forever and my rest of my family and everything. But at the time, you're just involved in a snooker match. You're trying to win the snooker match. And it's only afterwards, I think, you realise the magnitude of what you've just missed out on or what you've just achieved. So, yeah, there's been a few sort of highs and lows. But like I say, I think that it all comes afterwards. I think you realise afterwards what you've actually just achieved or what you've just missed out on.
I want to ask you, Joe, about the shootout series. It's been very popular over the last couple of months with the first 5 minutes of the match plays after 15 seconds per shot, the last 5 minutes reduced to 10 seconds. You've been taking part in them. What's your thoughts about the shootout series?
I'm pretty open about it, really. I fully understand why people say it shouldn't be a ranking event. I'm actually in that camp. I don't think it should be a ranking event, purely and simply because we don't play by proper snooker rules.
A few more questions here then, Joe. I've got to ask you the best player you've ever played against in a tournament. Who's that?
For me, it's Ronnie O'Sullivan, hands down. He's the best. I think Judd Trump is catching fast, but you know, I turned pro the same year as Ronnie. Ronnie's been doing it since 1992. He won his first ranking event a year later. Judd Trump is playing unbelievable snooker. You know, snooker like we haven't seen before sometimes. But I think, you know, you've got to do it for a good few years before he can sort of like try and stake claim to Ronnie's crown, especially in my opinion anyway.
Yeah.
Joe, I just want to go back to 1999 again, because I've got a little story that me and Isaac found about, it was a final qualifying day for the China Open, I believe, where Stuart Bingham called you on the morning of you playing Alan McManus. Would you be able to tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, well, Stuart at the time, he's become a little bit boring as he got older. But when he was younger, he used to like playing a few little practical jokes, and he was a bit of a joker. And what used to happen in the qualifiers was there was three sessions: 10 o'clock, 2:30, and 7:30. And normally, if you played your first match at 2:30, you would play every day at 2:30 until you either got beat or you qualified. So anyway, this China Open, I'd got through to the final qualifying round, and I played every single match at 2:30. Well, I was sort of just lazing about in my hotel room, ready to check out at 12 to go and get ready for my match at 2:30. And Stuart phoned me at 9:45. And he said, "Where are you?" And I said, "I'm watching telly." I think I don't know what I was watching. God knows. Lorraine Kelly or something like that. And he said, "Well, you're on in 10 minutes. And I was like, "Yeah, okay, Stu, nice one." And just sort of hung up. Yeah. And he phoned back. He said, "Joe, I'm being deadly serious. You're playing in 10 minutes. I said, "I'm not. I'm on at 2:30. He said, "No, there's only a few matches today. So the times have changed round." So I literally, I've never got dressed so quick in all my life. And luckily my B&B was about 100 yards from the venue. No. And I literally got in as the referee was walking the order, because there was about 10 tables playing at once. And the players and the officials were walking through to the tables. And I managed to sort of catch up with them and walked through, and I was sort of like sweating and managed. I got there in the nick of time, and I won 5-0. Yeah. So it was good preparation.
Ideal preparation.
Perfect preparation. Yeah, I haven't tried it again since, but it worked well that day.
That's a very, I can imagine that's a very interesting scenario to be in indeed.
Yeah, he still thinks I owe him one for that. I don't know how many times I've got to repay him, but he still goes on about it.
I've got a nice one for you here, Joe. You mentioned earlier on about you get back into training for a purpose or a reason, but has this break sort of made you really motivated to, or appreciated even, sorry, your love of the sport obviously missing it for so long, and when the date you could go back?
I don't think I've ever doubted how much I love the sport. I think, if anything, it's quite worrying for me, because it's made me realise just how much I don't enjoy practicing, because I haven't missed it at all. So I think I know. You know, I'm not finishing myself off. I've got quite a few years left, but I know that my enthusiasm is sort of waning a little bit for snooker. I've been doing it since I was 12. I'm 46 in August, but I haven't particularly missed the practicing, but I have really missed the competition. So, you know, and obviously the two go hand in hand. If you don't practice, you don't get much competition. So, yeah, I think it's just hit home to me a little bit that I, without snooker, I pretty much do nothing. You know, I haven't got a second career I can turn to. I haven't got that many like hobbies and things that I'm really into that much. So, yeah, it's proved to me that I still need snooker in my life big time. So, yeah, I actually enjoyed practicing a little bit today, and I'll gradually build it up, and hopefully I can play for a few more years.
Hopefully so indeed. Well, you mentioned as well, or I've seen as well, that you did a bit of punditry in the past. Maybe that would be is that something you'd pursue maybe once you retire from playing, because then you don't really need to practice that much then?
No, it's so, I would genuinely like to do that. My little spell I had, I enjoyed it. And once again, without this thing, I'd been approached to maybe be on the Eurosport team for the World Championship if I wasn't like actively playing in it. So I've sort of got my foot in a few doors, and it's something I'd like to do, because whether I'm involved playing snooker or not, I don't know, but I'd like to be involved somehow. It's all I've ever known, really. You know, I've done it since a young kid. So I'd like to think that maybe once snooker's finished playing-wise, I could go over to that side of it. But it's very difficult. You know, there's only like a team of six or seven commentators stroke pundits for each event. And obviously there's some great ex-world champions that are sitting on the sofa at the moment. So it'd be hard to dislodge one of them. But no, it's something I'd definitely be keen to do if the opportunity was there.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure once again, and all the best for the future, and bring on the World Championships. And I hope that's going to be a good tournament for you.
Brilliant. Yeah. Look forward to that. Cambridge 105 Radio.